This is the August 1st edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Merrill Crowley of Midwest Market Solutions out of Watseka, Illinois, Phil Shaw of Under the Agridome. He's in Dresden, Ontario, and Joe Vaklovic joins us from Standard Grain out of Gallatin, Tennessee, along with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Merrill Crowley, let's start with you and get a list of items that maybe we should discuss for the day.
Oh, I guess looking at the report coming up, what are the chances that we get some bullish information off of that? What do everybody think about the crop in general right now, the later stuff included? And I think that'd be enough for right now.
Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain.
It was reported or announced today that President Trump is going to put tariffs on just about everything we import from China beginning on September 1st to the tune of 10%, I think, on that additional $300 billion. And that's probably not going to help grain demand. Soybeans in particular, where we've got a lot of outstanding unshipped sales to China.
Dan Zwicker, your list?
I guess I'd like to, you know, get an idea, I guess, what everybody's thinking the actual yield is and whether or not anybody got a good weather forecast for the next 2 weeks.
And Phil Shaw from Under the Agridome, anything to add?
I am not used to having a list, Todd, but I just was thinking about the prevent planting acres, how many acres that might actually turn up on August 12th, how that will affect, how that and other things with this crop year will affect basis movement across the eastern Corn Belt. And I also wouldn't mind chatting about the market facilitation payments and how that might be affecting production decisions going into next year.
So, Dan, I want to start with you because we closed out the month of July. I'd like to know technically what the market looked like on that day, yesterday, as opposed to today.
Well, I would say the last 2 days we had here this Wednesday, Thursday, sharp decline, basically solidified the head and shoulder top formations that were traced out on both December corn and November soybeans. Just glancing at the chart, it kind of says that maybe December corn futures are vulnerable to maybe another 20 to 25 cents. Glancing at the soybean chart, it looks like maybe we're fairly close. We may not have as much weakness in the soybeans as we do probably in the corn. But I still look at the quarterly reversal that we posted up during the month of June as still as a strong possibility that was a major low point, and the overall trend in the complex is to move higher as we go into the fall, winter, and next spring.
Hey, Phil, you posed an interesting question, and I'd like to know what your thoughts here are on the impact of MFP on next year's crop as you gaze from your northern view across the U.S.-Canadian border.
That's something that I would like to know. I actually saw, I don't know whether it was on Twitter or some other article I wrote, that, you know, I'm a Canadian, so I don't get market facilitation payments. And I look at the trade situation maybe a little bit different than everybody else does, but I almost look at it as an American annuity going forward, depending on who wins next year's election. And I actually heard some people speculating about how that may or may not affect planting decisions next year. And I really don't know, because it obviously doesn't affect me here. I would like to know maybe what some of the other guys might have an opinion about that.
Hey, Merrill Crowley, do you think there will be any lasting MFP impact, or is it a prevent plant acre impact?
That's going to kind of depend on your prevent plant, but I think a lot of corn was planted in order to be eligible to receive MFP. And then we'll just have to go into next spring seeing what our prices are, what our ratio between corn and beans are, If we keep the current ratio now, I still think they're going to be wanting to plant quite a bit of corn. And so from that standpoint, I see that effect because a possible MFP for the corn versus the soybeans might have them planting the corn a little bit heavier than normal.
That would be if they expected one. Anybody else have a thought on this, Dan or Joe?
I think next year, I mean, given the current price structure, we'll plant every bit of 95 million acres of corn, maybe 97, unless something really changes here. Now, December corn in the 2020, up until these last couple of days, was sitting in that 415 to 420 range. Well, no beans were struggling to hold $9. I mean, that tells you to jump and plant as much corn as you can. Now, did anybody do any corn marketing? I don't know. But as of right now, I mean, the price structure, regardless of MFP, suggests that we do a whole bunch of corn acres next year.
I really don't think the MFA payment will mean anything to next year's acreage mix. I think that's, you know, the tendency would be to plant, you know, kind of probably what they wanted to plant this year. A lot of it will probably depend upon how the South American crop plays out. I mean, if one of their crops or the other would come up short and would happen to change the corn-soybean ratio to favor one over the other, then we'd maybe see some changes there. But I think, at least for right now, I don't think the actual cash payment to the farmer, since it's a per-acre payment, would probably impact what farmers will plant next year. It'll be what the corn-soybean ratio is and their individual farm, which does whatever does the best. Some of these guys probably going to have too much corn on corn, so there might be a tendency to back off of corn a little bit rather than going 3 years on corn. I do know there's a lot of corn on corn this year, the ones that got planted, but then, of course, there's a lot of acres that didn't get planted that may go to corn next year.
Phil, do you think there should or could be an impact? Because it seems to me that it's simply because it's not really tied to what you planted, that it should be agnostic.
Yeah, it should be agnostic. It's just interesting to hear the comments. It all makes sense to me, except from a foreign perspective. From a foreign perspective, it's just seen as a huge incentive for American agriculture. I called it an American annuity that farmers are depending on that's totally related to the whims of politics. And so the other guys would know more about, actually, it all made good sense what they said, but from a foreign perspective, it's seen as an incentive for American agriculture to do what they do in a big way. And that affects us here in Canada, as well as other of the U.S. trading partners throughout the world.
Well, do you think that Brazil and Argentina will see it in the same way that you and Canada do?
I think definitely foreign producers see it somewhat that way, but I mean it's really none of our business. It's an American political thing, but when foreign producers look at that, they know what's happening, and I don't want to get into the politics of it, but it is seen as a positive for American farmers and for it's a positive for production in the United States.
Yeah, but you opened this can up, so I want to go one more step, and because I'm thinking about South America in particular on the southern cycle, right? So will they plant more soybeans for fear that there will be an awful lot of corn next year in the United States?
I think they're just going to try to plant more of everything.
I'm curious what the price is in Canada for corn and beans.
Well, the price for corn right now is $5.80 Canadian, and it's just under $11 Canadian for soybeans. Part of that's related, especially for corn, because we're part of the Eastern Corn Belt, is because of the devastating crop that we've had in the Eastern Corn Belt this year to increase the price to some extent. That's where we're at.
That's a good price, and will you have a crop for corn?
Well, I've written many times that, you know, typically when we don't have enough corn here in Ontario, we'll import from the United States. And sometimes when we have too much, we actually export it to the United States. But this year, there's not good crop in Ontario, and it's not a good crop in Ohio and Michigan and Indiana. So, you know, there might be in the specter of it coming from offshore. But, of course, that will depend on what basis values are. And we're not talking the volumes that you're talking in the United States.
So, Merrill, let's get your thoughts on the August crop production report, since we've made that skip into what yield looks like and volume might be. What do you think those numbers will be for corn and soybeans?
Well, I was reading through and kind of following RJO, and I kind of liked what they were talking about. They were looking for another possible 2 million acre yield decrease and a 1 bushel per acre for soybeans. That should leave us basically in stocks about 589 million. So I would think if we get something like that, that ought to perk prices up a little bit. They're also looking for about 7 million less corn acres and a decline of 3 bushel per acre for the yield. And again, that would take us down to about 1.2 billion bushels for carryout versus the current 2. Again, I think something like that would definitely excite the marketplace, from especially where we've gone now. And I've always known that, you know, the markets always overdo it. The difficult thing, it's not only difficult enough to figure out where we're at with our yield and our acreage or bushels per acre, but here we sit, if you wanted to compare, say, to 93, we were still pretty much king of the export market. And now here we sit, we're kind of the dog of the export market, and we seem to be more of the storage country than the export go-to country. And so with our poor demand, we're seeing prices being pressured. So how high that'll take us, I'm not sure at this time. We would need to see some follow-through confirmation, and as of yet, we don't know what USDA is going to say.
Did RJO write about whether they thought those numbers would be in August or whether that's what they thought the ending?
They thought it would be part of the August report, yes. And the yield would be more subjective, since they're really not taking, they're going to just use yield modeling and farmer surveys for the yield.
Joe Vaklevic, you think that USDA will come down that far in August?
I don't know what they're going to do, but I'll tell you that the range of what is estimated for this corn crop, if you were to pull, you know, a whole bunch of traders that actually trade the markets, the range of estimates is probably 2 billion bushels wide. It might be bigger than that. So the fact of the matter is that we have absolutely no clue what the crop is. I mean, not acres, not yield, not anything. It's too early to know yield, and the acres are a giant toss-up. I mean, the things that we know as of right now, which have driven the market lower as of late from those highs, are that our demand is terrible. I mean, we're getting killed in the export market. Ethanol production's falling off. Soybean crush has fallen off. I mean, you've got a strong U.S. dollar, you name it, and it's bad on the demand side. So I really don't have much of an opinion as to what the crop is. I just know that the opinions that are out there are highly, highly, highly variable. We're not going to have a clue till January. That's what I think.
How about you, Phil? Do you have a guess?
That's so interested in hearing from the guys what they think. You know, I was asked to speak in Indiana last year to the Farm Bureau, and I visited a great farmer in Ohio on the way down, and beautiful farm, 75 bushel per acre soybeans and 250 bushel corn, and this year he didn't get planted. You know, so I mean, it's just incredible. So, you know, I concur with the other guys. I don't know what yield is, but we cannot discount how difficult it was in the Eastern Corn Belt this year in places like Ohio and Indiana, parts of Illinois, and of course up here in Ontario. So it's a real wild card going into August 12th.
Dan, do you have thoughts?
Well, I'm back home on the farm, which is right south of the Quad Cities, Rock Island, Illinois, Moline, Illinois, Davenport, Iowa, Bettendorf, Iowa, and I got a chance to ride in a Hagee yesterday, and that was kind of fun. I can't believe how quickly they can do 80 acres or 160 acres in that Hagee. I mean, that was quick. That's big, man. That's quick. And our corn was planted in May. It was super, super wet. It went in, you know, when it shouldn't have went in, but that was the only window they had to put it in. And I mean, we do have some ears, but it's got a long ways to go to make any it's lucky to probably do 2/3 maybe of what it did last year. And of course, the last 2 years we've been in that 290 bushel plus area. And I'm not sure we could get 200 out of it, but I don't know. I mean, it's got a long ways to go, and we need a rain real bad up here. That's all I know.
Does anybody think that it mimics 1993 at all? Does any of the guys think 1993 is in the mix here, similar type year?
It could be, but see, 93 was more of a Western Corn Belt phenomena. They're the ones that got hit worse, where this year is more of an Eastern Corn Belt. And I do think the fact that, you know, 93 proved to us that rain doesn't always make grain, and the excessive moisture that we did have here during the May, April, May, first part of June time frame is probably going to end up in a much lower yield. Whether or not it's going to be as steep as 93, we don't know until the combines roll. And that's kind of what happened to us in 93. We didn't know where we were at until the combines started rolling.
And that was for the corn that was left. And the big difference, Phil, is that in 93, the floods came after the crop had been in the ground and came in August. So it was not that, it was simply that there were zeros. I mean, and it was large enough that when you look at the satellite, it just took out an immense number of acres, and they just disappeared completely, and the market just could not get a handle on, you know, a crop that was there, and then suddenly it was just gone.
Yeah, I've just heard some people say that maybe market action would mimic 1993, where it keeps going up through August 12th and September. But of course, we know none of that. So,
well, in 93, we really didn't get going until later June. We had more of a July rally, and it kind of ended toward the end of July, first part of August. And then August was down into September. And then when the combines started rolling and we realized that the yields were way under what everybody thought, that's when she started taking off. And then USDA confirmed that in the October crop report. And then that market just basically marched higher and finally put a peak in for the 93 crop year in January 94, right on the January final crop report. Now, if we were going to do something similar to that, since this year we kind of peaked in June, our July was down, then if we were going to kind of maybe repeat a 93, this market should begin to stabilize next week. We should maybe get a positive report out of USDA, and then maybe the market would start turning higher on anticipation that if USDA chopped it this much in August, then they're going to chop it more as we go down the road. So it kind of, USDA is going to be kind of the market here of how aggressive they are or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, I've been in this business for 40 some years, and I don't have a clue what USDA is going to report on next Monday, mm-hmm. I think, or a week from Monday.
Mm-hmm. And then Joe, on the flip side of this, and you talked about it a couple times, but not only do we not know what's happening with supply, it appears that demand is being restructured and the United States is not particularly in that loop at this point, or not as much as it has been in the past?
Well, very, very short term here. I mean, during the next, say, 3, 4, 5 trading sessions, I think the market is going to have to react a little bit to these additional tariffs. And now you've got to think about, like I said, we've got unshipped soybean sales to China that are at risk. We've got new crop soybean sales that are at risk. And then the future of demand into next year is at risk if this trade war escalates. And it really doesn't look like it's going anywhere anytime soon. And then that is not even to mention the fact that the ethanol business is in some pretty serious trouble here. We're starting to see the weekly ethanol grind fall off a little bit. We've seen some much softer numbers from NOPA in the monthly crush reports. So, you know, just because we have light crops, and we will have light crops, there's no doubt about that. Just because we have light crops does not necessarily mean that we have to have much higher prices. We've got big old crop carryouts still. We've got a lot of grain and oilseed floating around in this country. We can tolerate light crops to some extent. It's just a matter of, you know, how light are the crops, and that's really still the big unknown here.
All right, standing here today, if you had to pick a direction for the marketplace through December, and I'll go through each of you, and I think, Phil, I'll put you under the gun first. Is it sideways, friendly, down, based on your supply and demand structure?
I would put it, you know, of course, nobody knows, and I say that all the time, but I would say upwards. That's what I would say. I'm mainly reflecting on the light crops that we have, but I don't want to discount what Guy said about demand. That's a real problem, but I am emphasizing the light crops that we have in much of the U.S. Corn Belt this year.
I'm looking for a low this month. I kind of follow what Dan's talking about, and I think it does mirror 93 to some extent. The differences were all well pointed out by everybody, as far as I'm concerned, and so looking for a low now and a pop back up. I think we could possibly go for the July highs.
I hate to say I'm friendly because everybody else said they're friendly. I think I would like to be friendly, but I think that this thing could take a little bit longer to develop, perhaps, than some people would like. I feel like everybody I've talked to here this week, even after the sell-off, is still bullish the market. That's got to change. We've got to change sentiment. We've got to push some length out of this deal. We got to make some farmers probably make some bad decisions sales-wise. You've got to rebalance this thing a little bit if we are to rally later in the ball game. I think there will be some good marketing opportunities maybe toward the last couple months of this calendar year and even into the first several months of the next calendar year. I just don't know when this thing is going to develop. Do we bottom next week or in the next couple of weeks like some people suggested, or do we not post a bottom until we start to actually see some yield results off the combine? I'm not sure how the timing of this is going to work, but I'm not going to get real bearish deep corn at $4, and I'm certainly not going to get bearish any soybean contract with an eight in front of it.
Well, I kind of lean Joe's way a little bit, going to force farmers to make some bad decisions, and usually those bad decisions are made at the end of August when they're required either to sell their old crop corn or renew up for another year of storage, or at least a six-month storage. So you usually have a lot of end of the marketing year selling around August 31st. But I do think this market will maybe, I don't look for no V bottom unless USA would really surprise us. But I would agree that we maybe need some spend some time going sideways during the month of August. We may end up with an August low, but I don't think we're going to go anyplace hard unless a weather event would come in that would change it. USDA would surprisingly shock us with, like, you know, an 82 million acre planted corn crop or something like that. So I think it's going to take some healing, some sideways action, but I do agree. I think October, November, December, and on into next spring, I guess I want to be friendly to the market. And I think the May low may go down as something fairly important.
Will basis or futures require or ask producers to sell up front? Because it has at this point, Phil, or at least it looks like that's what it wants producers to do. And will it continue to do that? And will it pay more?
I think in the Eastern Corn Belt it will, but my thoughts are always Ontario and Quebec. And there's no question that basis is going to be a driver of cash prices here. Of course, we have the Canadian dollar to think about, which the other guys don't have to think about that. But yes, definitely in the eastern part of the country. And basis in Ontario depends largely on what you do in the U.S. and the Eastern Corn Belt. And the crop simply is not there in places like Ohio and Ontario and Michigan and places like that. So I definitely think that basis could give some real – it's already given good marketing opportunities here in Ontario, but it might become more real as we go on, depending on what happens to this crop, which is very, very late. You know, my crop doesn't look too bad, but it's August 1st for crying out loud, and that's a problem here in this far north, you know what I mean?
Do you have corn that's not silked and tasseled yet?
That's right. And I would say that three-quarters of the Ontario crop is like that right now. And Ontario is a long place. It goes from Detroit all the way to Montreal, right? And so, you know, this is an issue. But it's always an issue, but this is more so of an issue this year. But it's not only here, it's in Ohio as well, in Michigan, and, you know, the Eastern Corn Belt. So.
It's across, well, all the way through Illinois.
That's right.
Yeah. So what's your Black Layer date, do you think?
Oh, man, you're getting scientific on me. I'm an agriculturist.
And is it past your first? So when I look at the numbers here, so here's a couple of things. So I'm almost positive about this, that the corn that went in was the hybrid they expected to plant in. So it was 110 or 114 day corn that went in June 1 and after. And Black Layer date is going to be about, under normal conditions, about October 15th, which here is actually the average first freeze date as well.
Yeah, that might be a bit late for us here in the deep southwest of Ontario, but there's no question that all of that's true. That puts this whole crop at risk here. And, you know, if Ontario and Quebec had problems, then the basis would increase in Michigan and Ohio. So to me, I see basis as very important as we go forward. And I post a lot of basis maps because I think it's incredibly interesting. It tells a story by itself. And this year, it's certainly going to be like that.
Absolutely. And on my Twitter account, I retweet them all the time. Thank you for posting those. I appreciate that. If you want to follow him, he's at Agridome. And it's a great place to follow. Let's start to wrap this up and get a final word from each of you. And I kind of think I want the final word to be on what new crop sales can or should be, or what advice is at this point. Joe Vaklovic, you want to start for me?
That's a tough question. New crop sales should have been made a month ago, right? So as of right now, I don't know. I mean, whatever you got on the books, keep it on the books. If you've got some put options that you bought at higher levels, you could always try to take them off at some point if you think you can pick a low. But I'm not hugely interested in doing a whole lot of marketing right now. If I had to do anything, maybe it would just be some outright put options. Volatility has come way down as this sell-off has developed. I'm still very, very worried about demand. You know, it's really struggling. That's one of the things that I know that I can tell you. And again, the thing that I cannot tell you anything about, I don't know a darn thing about it, is how big the crop's going to be. It's going to be light, but how light, I don't know.
Yeah, I knew the day that my cash bid went to 444, I should have sold, and I did not. Dan Zwicker, what do you think about new sales?
Well, I think, you know, at this time, it's just, you know, stay patient, see what USDA comes up with. And, you know, seasonally, it's not uncommon to get a little rally as we go on into September. But we do have that magical date of people, you know, having to sell their corn in storage or get renewed. And that has a tendency to put a little pressure on the market the last couple of days of the month. So, but I would probably stay patient at this point in time on new crop sales because everybody's crop is going to be much smaller than what they thought. And just see how this thing plays out, because I do think that the market will regroup here and we'll have some firmness as we go into year's end.
Merrill Crowley?
I would like to see the spread start working back to a better situation than we've been seeing up here the last couple of weeks. They, as well as the price for December, is sitting at some very important support between 4 and 406. And if you're mimicking 1993, that point should hold and we should get a decent rally off of it. Now, with the unknowns that we're still going to face, even after this report, if we get a good report, I don't want to take some action using puts to get a floor in this market, leaving my upside open at this time.
And Phil Shaw.
I appreciate, Todd, you asking a Canadian to come on your panel, but it's great to be with my American friends here. As far as new crop goes, in Ontario and Quebec, we're flat price sellers, largely depending on the Canadian dollar. I would be bullish for new crop opportunities in corn, simply because basis is going to drive that, and we don't have the crop here, and it's not in the Eastern Corn Belt as well. For soybeans, that's a whole different ball of wax. I don't see the China market coming back for my American friends. I think they're gone, and demand's going to be a problem. And so I don't know what to say about that. But definitely for corn in this part of the country, I think there'll be lots of good marketing opportunities ahead.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Philip Shaw of Under the Agrodome in Dresden, Ontario, Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain out of Gallatin, Tennessee, Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas, and Merrill Crowley of Midwest Market Solutions out of Watseka, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.